It's a different lesson. I didn't want y'all to think that I had slipped already. So anyway, I want to conclude the lesson that we were starting this morning with what we're going to talk about tonight are hindrances to giving. What is it that causes us often to not do what we ought to do in this realm? And so the first thing that I would suggest to you is turn with us back to 2 Corinthians, and let's look in chapter 8 and at verse 9. And we talked about that this morning, but we want to explore it a bit more tonight. The failure to realize God's rich blessings in our lives. He says this at verse 9, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though He was rich, yet for your sake He became poor, so that you by His poverty might become rich." You understand that He's using rich in two ways there. That we should think in terms of what we should bless God with, but we have in our poverty, that is our separation from God spiritually, He has made us wealthy in that He has given us eternal salvation. If you drop down to verse 15 of that same chapter, He says at that place, "As it is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack." And if you back up in that, the point of it being taken from the time when, you remember, they were to gather manna. If some gathered too much, then they supplied to those that didn't have, because it was all to be eaten, you remember, at the end of the day. So he says at 13, "I do not mean that others should be eased by and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness." Remember, we talked about this morning that the main idea was not in Paul's mind as much the relieving of the saints that were poor in Judea. That for sure, of course, is the main effect of the money. But he said there's a very important secondary feature, and that is that they became one. You bless them, the Jews bless the Gentiles with salvation. The gospel went forth from the Jews to the Gentiles, and because of that, they now have the ability to bless them materially. And so he uses that statement then. So whoever gathered much had nothing left over. Whoever gathered little had no lack. You think about God supplying all that we needed for salvation. How much more so do we need to recognize our need to give back to Him? And one of the ways that we can do that is in our monetary giving. The Corinthians had received so much. If you look at verse 8 in this chapter, he says, "I say this not as a command, but to prove by earnestness of others that your love also is genuine." And we looked at that this morning. Paul could have just commanded them. That's the point he's making. He could have just, as an apostle, said, "Do this." And of course that would have been right, but that often doesn't show anything about the heart, does it? And sometimes what the gospel will do, or what the writers and Paul, as he spoke to people, is he wants to challenge their hearts. He wants to make them think about all the great blessings that they have received from Jesus and all that they have been given by the Jews bringing the gospel to them. And as the Macedonians are now showing that they don't have it and they're willing and urgent to give it, then he's challenging the Corinthians, who were wealthy and should give as they had planned to do so. It's easy to forget how blessed we are. We look sometimes at what we don't have, or we look at other people who have so much more than we do. But it only takes you going to a third world country and working for any length of time to realize how immensely blessed we are. How that you can just go to a spigot and turn on and there's fresh water. And you think about in some countries, and you watch them do it every day. They walk, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 miles to a place where they can get fresh water, put it in their containers, and then go back. And every day this is repeated. You and I don't even think about it. We just go to a spigot, turn it on, there it is. And we forget how richly blessed we are in so many other ways. And so how much more so we have obligation to give. In fact, that was a point that Paul made in his speech in Acts 14:17. He said to the Gentiles there, "Yet he did not leave himself without witness, that is God, for he did good by giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness." The things that are in the world, Paul argues in the Roman letter, ought to declare the nature of the Godhead. That is, that there is a God That's the first order of belief. Without faith, it's impossible to please Him, or we must believe that He is. Here's witness to it, he says. The goodness that comes from His hand and the bounty that comes from His hand so often is something we take for granted. To the rich, he said, remind Timothy in chapter 6:17, you preach this, he said, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. God is not sometimes I think we think a celestial killjoy. He gives the things of this world to us in order that we may enjoy them. That's the book of Ecclesiastes also, that we work with our hands that we might also enjoy. But understanding that ought to motivate us to count our blessings and to abundantly give back to our God. And then in the passage that we've read this morning, 2 Corinthians 8, 6, and 7, the English Standard translates it this way, accordingly we urge Titus that as he had started, so he should complete among you this act of grace. He's describing what the Corinthians should do in sending their money to Judea through Paul and the men that would carry it with him as an act of grace. I want you to think about that. But as you excel in everything, he says to Corinthians, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all earnestness, and in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. Paul wants them, in effect, as we said this morning, tell me you understand grace by how you show your love in giving, as the Macedonians have certainly shown in the fact that they don't have it, and they with urgency begged us that we would take it. You probably don't know Teddy Roosevelt Jr. Probably in history you might not have even known there was such a man. But he was the oldest son of the more famous Theodore Roosevelt. But I want to tell you, Teddy Roosevelt Jr. was no small character himself. In fact, you may not know, there were only two generals that died on D-Day that were actually generals that didn't stay in the back but were with the troops when they landed on Normandy in the first wave, not the second, not the third, not when they had cleared out some of the lanes. There were two generals that landed that day. Teddy Roosevelt Jr. was one of them. He died that day of a heart attack, not from but probably the stress and the strain and all of that brought on a heart attack that took his life that day. He lived in the shadow of his famous father. How do you not? I mean, can you imagine if George Washington had a son? How do you ever live in the shadow of such a man? But Herbert Hoover made Ted governor of Puerto Rico in 1929. In 1931, because of the financial panic that swept the world, that we call the Great Depression, and so it swept that island as well. So all the principal banks closed. None of you as young people today, or even me, can imagine that banks would shut their door and that your money vanished. It's just not there. They shut their door in grave danger of not reopening. So Ted summoned the treasurer of the island that Puerto Rico was governed by, the United States, handed him a personal note that Ted wrote for $100,000. Don't you imagine what that's worth in today's money? It was one quarter of his fortune. Ted wrote a check to give to the Puerto Rican people. And then he got on the airwaves via radio and told them that the panic had ended, and the reason it would is because he would stand behind that. And so they knew the man that led their island. His proven character was invaluable in that crisis. And he left the governorship a year later, and the government had balanced the budget for the first time in 17 years. May he run for president. I want you to think about what that means in leadership. If somebody, just one person, does that kind of thing, how great can be the effect on other people? Tim Jennings tells that story. You may not know this, but it hasn't been too long ago, but it's been a few years now. The building where he is in Dallas burned down in Plano. And so they had to rebuild. And one of the men in the congregation gave that sum of money. He gave $100,000, but he's not somebody that had money. Tim said he gave virtually all he had. He gave virtually everything that he had so that that building could be rebuilt. There were other men in the congregation who had money and had not stepped forward and had not done that. But because of his action, Tim said, in some effect, this is a good shame, isn't it? Isn't it a good thing that somebody looks at another man's act and says, my goodness, if he can do that, what should I do? Isn't that what Paul's saying about Macedonia? My goodness, if they can do that, how wealthy are you, Corinth? And what should you do? And out of that, he said, we were able to rebuild the building with virtually no debt. All because one man was willing to do something very, 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 very stellar. Sometimes, he says, we fail in our hindrances to give because of procrastination. Remember, that was what he says to them. In this matter, I give my judgment, this benefits you. You, a year ago, he says to Corinth, a year ago, started only to do this work, but also to desire to do it. So now finish doing it as well, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. You imagine that he got pretty frustrated with the Corinthians. I mean, they had promised a year ago to deliver the money, and they had not done it yet. And so he is challenging them to do exactly what they said they would do. What about you? What about me? Do we budget God into our budget? You know, plan? In effect, say, this is how much in 2018 I will give to God. If we just go about our finances willy-nilly, you're going to end up not having anything in life. You plan, you budget. That's just sound. Every government should do it. Every business will do it or fail. Every household ought to do it. So don't you budget how much your car payment is? I mean, you wouldn't think about not making the car payment. You wouldn't think about not making the mortgage payment on your house, because those things mean that they'll come get it. If you fail making that payment enough, they're going to come get it. So that's just like we were talking about Brother Usry this morning. You set that pile aside. You set aside for mortgage. You set aside for your loan on your auto. Is there a pile, as we said about Brother Usry this morning, that he set aside for God? That was first. That was the first pile. And that we budget it that way. And that's exactly what Paul is saying to these Corinthians, that they were not acting as they had promised. Timothy, again, about the rich, this goes on in that passage that we were reading a minute ago. They are to do good, he says to the rich, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. I'm going to tell you, the words there obviously are drawing from what Jesus says about where you lay up your treasure, there your heart is also. If we lay up our treasure here, if it's all money and it matters only about what we can amass here and the things that money can buy, but if we send our money over there as it is, our treasure and our heart are there. And the money that we have here is just the power, as we said this morning, for action, to perform things, to do things in this world. Then if we send it over there, we are laying hold, as he said, or taking hold of that which is truly life. So he says two things to them. First, you must have purposeful giving, and secondly, you need to stick to it. You promise that you would, you budget that you will, then make certain that we do it. Thirdly, sometimes we are too concerned about what others are giving. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter it would be out of fairness. In effect, we know that principle. It is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. Sometimes somebody in a congregation might say, I just can't give. I don't have it. That was one of my admonitions to the college students this morning. Sometimes you need to think about the blessings you do have. You're able to eat out at really nice places. You have money. It's just a matter of budgeting and deciding, am I going to give some to God now, even as a student? But sometimes we can reason that way. Well, everybody over here on this side, they have jobs, they have money. But maybe it is that we're retired, and same thing we could say, or whatever our circumstances might be. I've been in congregations where it is very small membership. Everybody knows. It's kind of like you grow up in a small town. like I did. I mean, I grew up in a town of 300 people, and I lived in the suburbs to that town. And so, did you know everybody in a town of 300? You actually knew too much about everybody. Because when you're that small a town, everybody knows everybody else's business, too. And so we assume sometimes people, and maybe rightly so, that they have a great deal of money. One of the congregations I preached at was a very small congregation. Very obvious one family had a considerable amount of money. He could have carried that congregation. There is no doubt about it. Everybody knew that he had that ability. Just write out one check on Sunday and everybody else keep it in their pocketbooks. He could have carried the entire work of that church. But purposely sometimes he didn't give to that church. It didn't mean he didn't give. He didn't give to that church because he was wanting other people to remember that they needed to carry the load to the extent that they had the ability. God doesn't judge according to what you don't have. He judges according to what you do have. And so it's real easy sometimes for somebody to look at that and say, well, they've got the ability. Why should I give hardly anything? I don't need to give anything. He'll carry it. The work will go on and God's work will be done at this place. But we need to remember that that's not the right way to look at things. In Mark the 12th chapter, you remember this, he called his disciples to him and said, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box, for they all contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty has put in everything she had, all that she had to live on. So giving is a private matter. It ought to be that way. Someone could boast, for instance, I give $10,000 a week, and we would be, I think, greatly impressed by that. But God may know that he has millions, and $10,000 is like a drop in a bucket. On the other hand, there may be a lady in the congregation that doesn't have a lot of money. We know she has a pension maybe from being a school teacher or whatever. She can only give a few dollars, but you know what we don't know? Is that she gives privately to foreign preachers, and she may be young enough still to care for indigent parents, and she may give not as much as it looks like to everybody else because she's taking care of a poor widow that lives next door to her. You see, we don't know, do we? And those of you that count the money have to be careful, right? Because you do see it. You do know sometimes. And it is that it ought to be based upon God knows. And God is going to judge us according to that. So each one of us needs to consider our giving carefully. Do you like yearly salary reviews? Do you like raises? I think probably you'd be a real different kind of person if you didn't like that. But do you do the same thing, and do I do the same thing with my giving to God? Do I review it annually? Do I think about raising it? That might be for emphasis. So ask yourself these questions about the lesson tonight and this morning. How long since I counted my blessings? And do I hide behind excuses? And am I putting off doing what I know I need to do? And am I more worried about what others are giving than my own? May the Lord help us. And I hope these lessons have helped us to think about it today. If you're subject to heaven's invitation this night, Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned. We can help you this tonight if you need to come forward as we stand and sing.